Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this last day. I hope you have a great week with a lot of sessions. I had a fun party yesterday and done a lot of networking. My name is Jonas Gunnemo. I'm working as an Outlook Escalation Engineer based in Stockholm, Sweden. I've worked for Microsoft a little bit more than 19 years. I've done Office, Exchange Server. I've been doing Outlook, Fixed PM, and different other roles in order to enhance my skills and come to this session. So today, we also see that Tom Batchelor is on the slide deck. He's unfortunately not being able to join us for a moment because he had to jump in and do another session. So today, we're going to talk about modern authentication. As I said, I've been working quite a long time at Microsoft, and this is the most complex technology I've been working on for. And I'm not expecting me to do everything today. I have a lot of material to go through, so there will be not any Q&A in the end of the session. I will stay up here or outside if there are any questions later on, but I will not have any Q&A. So modern authentication, most likely you have seen something similar before. It enables us to not use basic authentication, and that's basically in Office 365, the endpoint for auto-discover. The good thing is it also enables multi-factor authentication when we're using this modern auth. And it gives us support for other SDSs and our own. It's an open standard. And also gives you, as an admin or customers, possibility to use conditional access. And we're going through that a little bit later on. And of course, it's not only Windows platforms. As you can see, it's also iOS, Android, and everything else that maybe comes up in the future. So this is the 2.0 authentication we're going to talk about today. We are, just to give you a background where we're coming from. So around 2005, 2006, Twitter and Magnolia started to talk to each other and realized we need a different authentication method that we currently have today. And they looked into it. They couldn't find anything. So they come up with something called secure delegate access. And that's what we're going to look into, and that's what makes it complex and also makes it great. So open OAuth is an open standard. So around 2010, it first came, 1.0, and the one that we're currently using in 2.0 and came in 2012. As you can also see, and Google came along pretty early, and that's also, if you might remember, a couple of years ago, if you had Outlook, you would no longer connect to Google services because it disabled basic. So why does enterprise customers like this? It's for several reasons. One of them is, of course, they're going to authenticate against their own environment. We're not going to send password over the wire. And that's a good thing, and that's what we want to do. So this slide you have most likely seen during the week or before. We are enabling modern authentication on all our clients. Are we there yet? No. But we're working hard on it to make sure that all our applications that are talking to a service from OneDrive to Outlook to Word, SharePoint, or whatever we're going to have in the future is going to support OAuth. And this is an involvement that comes and further in development. So make sure you're having the latest updates. Speaking of latest updates, I'm going to do a little bit of a sidetrack just to make sure to take this opportunity when I'm speaking to you guys. Because as I'm coming from support, people are not calling in to say, Jonas, it works fantastic. I have had one case in 20 years when someone actually said that. No, they came to me and said, this doesn't work. And you're starting to troubleshoot it, but it's not coming to me with the most complex issues in EMEA, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, or in US. So that's where we're working on, the most complex, the most hot and political cases. And we have seen in the past, and I'm going to explain why we want to have going through this little bit sidetrack because of updates. Because you're going to realize under this presentation that updates is crucial for us to make this working as it should. And also you can see, most likely you've seen modern authentication that we have been talking about for a little bit, for some time now. but we come a little bit later in the game. But that's why we're kind of pushing it to make sure it's available everywhere. So in order to understand where we're coming from, where we're heading, we need to understand history. That makes more sense when you're then later on working with Outlook 2016 and the Office 2016. How many have 2016 today? Okay, quite a few. So from an escalation point of view, a couple of years ago, when I escalated, me and my colleagues escalated cases to the product team. It could be Word, Excel, PowerPoint. We came up with that, but we didn't really, really know when the fix could come up. And sometimes we got the feeling that this issue is more fun to fix than another one, but we couldn't really, so everything will be fixed, but we couldn't really, really say when it was released. We were kind of unpredictable in saying, okay, dear customer, thank you for supporting me and then giving me a case and I'm going to fix it, but I don't know when I'm going to release it. Another problem was, if you're an enterprise customer, you actually got the updates. But if you were an end user or a smaller company that didn't have a premier deal, then you maybe not know that the fix was there. And the reason we want to have a latest update is because we want to make sure that you not run into problems that we already fixed. So we thought, okay, this is not a good scenario. We want to be more predictable when we are asking in for updates. We also want to make sure that other customers take advantage of actually the updates we're releasing. So in August 2007, we released something called cumulative updates, CUs. Most likely you have heard about them. They came around and they are available on Download Center and Microsoft Catalog. And we're starting to release them every second month from August, October, December, February, April, and June. So that's kind of improved the situation for us in support because now more customers actually use the latest updates. But it also gave us a little bit more complexity because most likely you have seen Microsoft updates and you have public updates there. That was security updates. So now we have security updates and PUs released and we have the CU released. If it wasn't confusing for you, at least it was confusing for us in support because very different versions. So it can also mean that you can have several CUs in February, April, but you didn't release any security updates. And that was confusing. So we decided that we need to change this. So we decided to actually move away from the CU into something in modern called public updates. So now when you're using 2013, or 2010 for that matter too, and 16, now we're releasing updates to Microsoft Update every month. So we push them out every month. And then you're wondering, okay, that's good. But what about security updates? Well, Patch Tuesday has been historically a Patch Tuesday for security updates. So rather recently, what we did is we actually for Office, and it's going to be for other applications too, we moved the non-security updates to the first Tuesday every month. So if you're going to Download Center or Microsoft Catalogs, you can actually download the update for Office a week before they're going to a Microsoft update. And that could actually be something good because you can test it internally in your environment. And I can recommend you to go to this blog from Office Sustain Engineering because that one gives you the information on when these updates are available and what they are including. So that's a good thing that I really encourage you to do that. And also, when you may wondering, do I need to actually install every patch before? So let's say I'm installing something in October. Do I need to install everything before? No. So all Office updates has always been cumulative, which means that they include every fix we have done in the past. We have different baselines in the past. We maybe release something, and then we have a service pack, and then have to wait for a year. And then you have the service pack as a baseline. But every update that we are releasing are cumulative, which basically means you get all fixes that we ever did release before. So that's no confusion there. So latest updates. And this, of course, helped us a little bit in terms of support, because you have more and more customers that are actually using the latest bits. And you can enable it in different ways, but you really need to have the latest updates. Yes, from support perspective, someone's going to say, it's fantastic that you release updates every month. You're also breaking us every month. No, that's not true, but we see the benefit of it. I've been working hard to make it sure. And I know, because I'm sitting in support, so I know exactly what you're talking about. But I really encourage you to make sure that you're using the latest update, in particular when you're working with modern authentication. Because I'm going to go through some customer scenarios later on, and you will realize that if we have the latest updates, it's going to change. And it's not only on the client. It's more complex than that. But let's dig into that a little bit later. Also, if you don't use Windows updates, if you disable that one, you can, of course, go to Download Center, or you can use Microsoft Catalog to download it as well. So that's good. I mean, that was 2013. It's fantastic. You're giving updates, fixes. But then the feedback we got from our customers, from you, is, well, we have features here, but if I go into one of your competitors, they have much cooler features, and they have them instantly. And we say, yeah, sure, we're going to have them in 3 years, because that was the release cycle we had. So approximately every 3 years, we release something. That's not good enough in the today of the service. I mean, you can say Azure today or Office 365. It's updates constantly. So in 2016, we needed to come up with a different way. We wanted to innovate, and be more agile in terms of releasing updates and also adjusting what you need. You may have talked about giving feedback to product team. They have asked this week to be more kind of give us a feedback what you need, user voice. And this is actually the same thing here. So you have two versions, and this is important to remember. When we released Office 2016, Office 365, last year in July, around about that time frame, we released MSI, and you can, of course, use MSI today. And you can get the updates, the non-security updates on the first Tuesday, the security updates on Patch Tuesday, and you can live ever happy with that one. But you have to remember that in MSI build, we are not adding any new features. So if you're using Click to Run, you will benefit from all the features that we're adding, which connecting to the service. And you have seen maybe the Outlook team and other teams during this week presenting what we can do. Calendar sharing is a good example in Outlook that we're actually using the service, but that's not going to be in MSI versions, it's going to be in the Click to Runs. And then the problem, of course. 3 years, if you're releasing Office every 3 years, you have to do a lot of projects, you have to test it internally. How are you going to handle it in 2016? Well, in this case, we handle it in another way. We're using something called channels. It was originally said branches, but now it's called channels. So we have three different channels. The first channel is the default one, which releases updates every month. It doesn't mean that it's going to take a month for the development team to actually release something. As you may have heard Julia in the Outlook team, it took a year to develop Shared Calendar. But we are adding new functionality into the Office every month in each product. That is good, but if you're an enterprise customer, you might think that's a little bit pushing it too much. How do I know, as I mentioned, you have released a few things time to time that's not really helping me, it's breaking me. So then we go to another way. Let's have something called deferred channel. And you can actually have that on the other end. So we realize, okay, we're going to give you three big updates every year. So we have one on this end, current channels release every month, new features all the time, functionality, security updates. On this side of the story, we have something called deferred channel, and that's only released three times a year. But then you may, okay, perhaps we want to test this third one. So we have something in middle called first release deferred channel. And this gives the IT department or the whole organization, like pilots, to actually test the product before they roll out to end users. So see the deferred channel as the most quality-driven and the product that should go out to the end users. And then you're wondering, okay, this is a question I've heard for the last 20 years. How are you doing with testing internally at Microsoft? This is how we're using currently 2016. It's slightly simplified, but it gives you a broad overview of what we are doing in terms of click to run. So first of all, we have a feature team. It could be 1, 2, 10 people that are working on a feature. They are testing it, developing it, and testing it. When they think and feel this is ready, they then go to the next level and roll it out to the Office team. which could be anything from 2,000 to 5,000 people. After that, we say, okay, we're looking at telemetry, we're looking at the quality of this thing. Okay, we're rolling out it to Microsoft, everyone at Microsoft. Then we're going to run it like that. Then we have something called Insiders. We have the same thing for Office 2016 as for Mac and others, as you know, for Windows, the same model. So you can actually get your input earlier than anyone else. And when we get feeling that this is good, this is working fine, looking at telemetry, the reports and comments, then we're rolling it out to everyone in the world. That's how we're currently working on it. So let's count on the updates. Let's go a little bit back now to the modern authentication. So in order for us to use modern authentication in Office 2013 and 16, we had to change a little bit. As you may know that we had Outlook, we have one-way authenticate, and then we have Office, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, had another way authenticate. Very confusing. And so we needed to combine them. So we need to have a common platform because we want single sign-on, right? So if you log on to Excel, you also want to be able to use OneDrive. If you want Word, you also want to use Outlook. So single-on when it's working is fantastic. In calling me, it's not so fantastic because we broke everything. And that's the deal. So now everything is moved from the applications down into common authentication level. It's MSO, lives in MSO.dll. And then we have the last one when it's talking about modern authentication. It's called ADL.dll. This one is crucial to also make sure you're having updates. So now we are talking to, when I'm saying updated, when you're using MSIs, Outlook 2013 or 16, then you need to update these ones. If you're working click to run, then of course everything is updated. And now we come back to these products. I just want to remember that updates, so we update in products, is Outlook, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and then you need the underlayer, which is the glue, MSO, and then ADL. So this is a scenario where we're starting to dig into. So customers calling in and saying, hi, Jonas, we have escalated cases to me. So they go through frontline, and then eventually, if it's political hot or we don't know what's going on, me and some of my colleagues are working on this. And one of the goals I'm having is not to bother the customer in terms of the end user, because normally it's the upper management that are having the most problems. End users don't really like password prompts, but they're not that vocal. But PAs, upper management, they are. And we are not normally able to touch their machines. So this session is going to be more about understanding what the process is and how you can actually troubleshoot it by knowing the workflow. Yes, we're going to look at some of the log files, but that's not the actually important part. So working with in support, and especially with modern authentication, you need to understand the broader overview and pay attention to details. So what I would like to do, when you're leaving here, I want you to feel more comfortable. So instead of, if you ever talking to Microsoft support, you're not going to say, hi, I have an Outlook password prompt. I want you to say, hi, I have an online Office 365 environment, I have federated, I have an on-prem, I'm using Active Directory Azure Link, I'm actually using ADFS. Actually it's working very fine, but when the users are changing the password, I don't get the prompt, and I have some log files for you, can you please help me work together so we can find it? Instead of password prompts, give me an answer. So as I said, this is one of the most complex areas I ever worked with. And it's fun, but it's difficult. But sometimes it's easier to understand the workflow if you can come up with something you're familiar with. So we're going to take a journey. As I said, I'm from Stockholm. So we're going to take a journey from Stockholm to Frankfurt and Atlanta. Because I think most of you know how it is to fly. And we're going to use, so what happened here? So on Friday when I left in Stockholm, I went to the airport. I know the plane, I've been flying enough to know that the plane from to Frankfurt is around there. And I can actually see it through it when I'm coming into the airport. So I just go into security and say, hey, I'm going to take that plane to Frankfurt. Surprisingly, he looked at me, he's like, yeah, sure. Do you have a boarding card or a boarding pass? No? Okay, could you please go over there to actually get the boarding pass so you can come in here? And this is exactly the same thing with modern authentication. So we're going to use flying to understand the process in order to kind of make it more tangible, to make it easier to understand, because there's a lot of things going on here. So what happened in the modern authentication? So when I entered the security, he actually redirected me. The same thing happened here. So I'm a user. I'm in this case, since it's Outlook, it could be anything, it could be Word, it could be OneDrive, and I'm actually connecting to the service. In this case, the service is Exchange. I want to come there. I have nothing. As I said, I came with nothing. The same thing in the first time the client connects. We have nothing. And it's like, no, that's not going to work. I'm going to give you access denied. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to redirect you to know where to get the credentials for you. And that's exactly the same thing that's happening here. And as I'm going to the security. So I'm going to the kiosk. And on the kiosk, I go in here and say, OK, fine. What the first thing I do, I choose the very talented company, Contoso Airlines. And there, I type in my reference number. And then I actually have to authenticate. So I need my passport to authenticate. And Contoso Airlines actually trusts that I'm having the passport. And the thing is, security trusts it too, an airport. And anyone else trusts it, that this is me. And what else happened? I have to choose when it's authenticated. I actually have to choose my seat. And then I got two things. And I got the first one is here. Retain this ticket throughout your journey. Okay, that's good. What else? The next thing I get is my boarding pass or boarding card. And that one is, of course, targeted Stockholm to Frankfurt at a specific time, a specific seat. Even if I like to go to Atlanta and Frankfurt might be the best place, but there's a Hong Kong flight there. Can I use my boarding card there? No. It's the same thing in modern authentication. So in this case, my airline ticket, what it says, keep this one, is my refresh token. And my boarding card is, of course, the access token. So the refresh token, as you may know already, is UPN specific. It's lived longer. As you're using it good enough, it's going to be valid between 14 to 90 days. My boarding card is, of course, ideally not kicking out of my plane, but it's shorter lived, right? I can only using it for one flight. It's the same thing here. It's specific resources. I can't go to any plane. I can only open that particular document. It's short lived. It's valid for about an hour, and it's stored in registry. And the same thing, the refresh token is also stored in the registry. The refresh token is stored in a credential manager versus access token is actually saved in the registry. A classical way later on is like, okay, I cleared out the credential manager and all works, and I will get an error why it's working. So something for you to remember, as we all started here, we started to say OAuth, do not save password in credential manager, and we don't. So what we do save is actually the refresh token. We don't save anything else. But we're going to save the refresh token. So one can ask, if you use experience, if we get more prompts. We shouldn't. Where I'm sitting, we do. But when it's working, we don't. And of course, depending on the policy, we're going to look into that a little bit later on. But if you have policies, you may give the users slightly more prompts. But the overall workflow, no, it's not giving you more prompts. So now we're going to use, okay, so I went to the kiosk, I got my ticket, I got my boarding pass. So what happens really under the hood in later on then? So the same thing as that happened with the kiosk, I get the browser control. So when I get the response back from the exchange services, it says, you need to go over there. Then I get an connection to the STS service. As we talked, this is an open service. It doesn't have to be Microsoft EVS STS. And then they said, yeah, you know what? In order for me to kind of know who you are, you need a username here. So in the dialogue that comes up, and that dialogue I will show you a little bit later on with the case that we worked on, You need to have Adel up to date in that case. So in that case, I'm going to AWS to say, my name is here. Oh, you are federated. So if you are federated, which means I'm not going to use Active Directory in the Azure Active Directory to kind of authenticate you. I'm going to go to your environment. So I get another redirect. And this time, I'm going direct to the ADFS server, or third party. And this time, when you most likely you recognize it, the first try and the first control, you get the username, and then it's flickering to maybe something you have customized for the own environment. And then you type in your password, username and password. This is the only time that you send something over in terms of password and username. And then we're talking to your own environment. So the ADFS server talking to the main controller and make sure that, is this the right password? Yes, it is. And then I'm going to get a token back. It's called SAML token. So this is kind of another ticket that we are using. So we're not sending in like your password or anything else back. We're just using a SAML. Then I'm going to take, then the client is going to say, OK, I got something back from my ADFS server. I'm going to take that to the Evo SDS server and say, here. And it's going to be awesome. And why can it say awesome? Because ADFS, my environment, is actually trusting each other. So that's why when I'm saying this is a good SAML token, then we know that they are trusting each other. And since they're trusting each other, the AWS is able to give you a refresh token and access token. So now I'm going to cache the refresh token locally, again, in Credential Manager. You can use CMD key list and to get it out. And then after that, I go into my mailbox and I can open it up. So we can dig into this a little bit more and see where we are with that. So this is a tool that we're using a lot. It's Fiddler. So it's a third-party tool, and most likely you are aware of it, to kind of make it sure. So this is initial connection. So if you're using Outlook 2013, we're going to go through some prerequisites later on. It's not only the updates. For 2016, it's on by default. We're using modern authentication. But if you're looking at the header in the first time when we're connecting, we're actually going to see map HTTP, and that's a requirement. We cannot use RPC anymore. You have to use the new authentication. And also you see bearer, which is basically the way we are access token enabled. Client request ID, that's kind of interesting. So if you're ever working with us, Microsoft, and I'll give you an example later on, we can actually use this client request ID and follow it from the client. And then we can go to the exchange and go to the service to make sure we can find out if there's something broken, then we can trigger it. And of course, the username. And then you can wonder, do I really need to use Fiddler to understand if I'm using the latest modern authentication? Of course not. You can actually use Outlook. And here we go. You can use, if you go to the SysTray and right mouse click on the icon and hold the control key, you will actually see this dialog. So if any of you calling into Microsoft and using modern authentication and you say it doesn't say bearer, you didn't listen to me because you didn't update your client. So what else do we have? So initial response, this is kind of interesting. This is also down to troubleshooting. I said that you don't have to use AWS.js. We can use anything else. So if you do use Fiddler, and if it's very, very broken, then you're going to see trusted issue, because this is actually the GUID for SDS service. So you see something else, it's not going to be us. But more interesting is the last one on this highlighted authentication URI. Because if that one is wrong, imagine this again. If I'm going to the airport, I go to security, and I say, yeah, you need to go to the kiosk. And I should go in that direction, but that security guy is sending me over there to the highway. I'm never going to find that kiosk. It's the same thing here. If I'm never going to reach my ADFS environment, I will never, or in this case, the STS. If this is incorrectly configured, then of course I'm never going to get it. Another part of this is the ADFS. And again, you can use Fiddler, and I'm just going to give you an example on where we can get it. So you can use ADFS, and you can also see the response from Dog HTML. So you can actually see the information there that comes back from your own environment. And then when it's all working, we have the S2S returns the tokens. And this is interesting. If you, it was a little bit difficult to see on the slide deck before, but if you go into the registry and looking at when the access token expired, you know it's an hour. So in this case, we know here is 3,600. We can see that expires in 3,600 seconds, which is an hour. So that's already configured. But the next one expires on, that's kind of a high number. And if you're looking in Outlook, you actually have it translated. But if you want to kind of play around with it, does anyone know where it comes from? What kind of the standard date it's come from? It came actually from the 1st of January 1970, and all seconds until then. No more questions. It was San Francisco. And then eventually, when it's actually done, we get an access granted. So that's kind of the workflow. And I'm going to hammer in the workflow and how we're working on it, because this is going to help you when we're troubleshooting cases. We also talked about SDS. And this is something extremely important when you're actually talking to us. It would be very helpful if you're actually telling us that you're not using ADFS, or if you're not using AWS. We will find out eventually. But it will be kind of used to kind of tell you up front. So this is the shortcut link to getting the SSO providers. And again, make sure you're using the latest updates. And I'm going to give you some examples later on that we actually have had not only issues on Microsoft products, it's also some third-party products. So make sure when you're working with this, when you're setting it up, when you configure it, if you're going out to the clients, make sure you update the clients as well as updating servers. So then we talked about in the beginning, and you most likely have heard about it before, where does multi-factor authentication come in the whole picture? And, well, let's go back to the kiosk scenario again, when I just got my ticket and my boarding pass. So eventually it would be like I'm going to the Contoso, the very talented company. I type in my reference number, and then when it's asked for my passport again, at that point it's registered to say, okay, cool. We also registered you for a phone authentication, for instance. So they're going to call me at the airport to see if it's really me to be flying. And then if they approve that it's actually a way if I answer the phone, then it's going to reply back, and I got my boarding pass and ticket. So that's where it's currently living. Why MFA? So basically, it's a growing need for stronger security. And this OAuth helps us, and modern authentication helps us to enable that. It's also competitive driven. As you can imagine, you have other vendors and Microsoft, and they may or may not be earlier on multi-factor authentication. And it's also increased, as everyone is using mobile phones and smartphones, it's also an increased need to be more easier to log on, easier to kind of streamline the process, and sometimes it's down to regulations. And then, of course, what is it? So it is something like the factors, something I know, which is basically the password. And then it's something I, for instance, has. It could be cell phone. It could be, you know, as you also had the apps. And then, of course, the third part could be a fingerprinting or something, scanning eye or other parts. So what we have done in Office 365 is we are using phone, or we can using the app. And, of course, in combination with time, because if it's too long time, we're not really going to trust it's you, right? And then you can argue, why are we using phone, except for movies from some countries? It's not that easy to duplicate the phones and the phone numbers. And it's quite difficult to intercept phone calls. And also, its phones are widely used, right? Every user most likely have some kind of phone. It could be a smartphone, or it can actually be a regular phone. But it also helps the IT department to not actually have to distribute some kind of smart card or something else. We can actually use the personal device from the users. So that itself lowered the cost, increasing the security, but lowered the cost. And if you're wondering where it actually lives, lives that in the little yellow dot, not today in the yellow dot, but at least in Active Directory in STS. So back to the flying part. I now arrived in Frankfurt. Can I use my existing boarding card? No, it's already broken, right? It's done. So I need to do something else. I need to go again to some kind of kiosk. So I'm using my ticket, which is actually says again, retain this ticket throughout your journey. This is my refresh token. And this time, I get a new one printed. So I got my new boarding card. And this is exactly the same thing as happening with existing refresh token. So what's the process here? And what can we learn from it? So now, again, maybe an hour later, or still in the same process, I actually want to have access to reading a mail or document. Since I already have something in registry, I'm going to use that access token and send it over. And the exchange service is going to say, yeah, sure, but you know it's expired. So again, they're going to send me 401 back, and they're going to use another authentication URI so I know where to go. This time, since I have a refresh token, I'm going to use my refresh token and send it over to EvoSDS service, the secure token service. And that one is later on going to give me something in return, which is the access token. And then I'm happily open up my document. And this is an example of how it looks like if you're using Fiddler when actually posting information. When I already see I'm using Bearer, I'm only using having, you see, after Bearer authentication, you see that I already have something. So time to time when I'm coming to Frankfurt, I haven't really figured out how. But sometimes I'm walking a little bit. If I'm walking in this direction, it's perfect. Arriving, I'm going here, I'm taking the elevator up. I have to, since it's going to US, I need to kind of show some of the IDs, and then I'm fine. I'm going perfectly into the boarding area, and it's fine. Sometimes I'm ending up here. I'm going in this direction. I don't know why or how I'm ending up here. But if I'm going here, I realize I am in the main terminal. And what happens then? I get upset at myself, because what happens if you're in the main terminal, if you're going in transfer? Security. I have to go security again, which basically means take off everything, you know, take off the boarding card, take my laptop out, everything. And it annoys me. But this is exactly the same thing that's happening in modern authentication if you're an admin. So what we can do, we can actually adjust depending on where you are. So see this as if you're working at the intranet, at the company, everything is fine. You don't have to do anything. You just log on once and everything is fine. If you're going out to Starbucks, in this case, I'm ending up in the main terminal, you may want to apply some more security into it. But then there's a question. You keep talking about ANFS and client access filtering, but also conditional access policies. What are the differences, and why should I not use ANFS rules? Why can't I have them already running in my legacy environment? Why can't I keep using it? So let's see if we can kind of make it a little bit clearer. So again, client access filtering is perfect if you're using legacy authentication. I'm going to go look into that a little bit later. You can do certain things, but it's not too clever. And you cannot inspect the traffic that comes from OAuth. Conditional access up in 365, you have to use more authentication. It's more granular, and most likely have done some Intune or some other sessions this week. You will see more and what we can do there. I will not go into it, but it's just you can do more. So you remember when the workflow, right? So client talk to exchange says, I need some token, out to contact the STS service. STS service says, no, you have to authenticate to your own environment. Client contact your own environment, ADFS server talks to domain controller say yes. And then ADFS sends a token, sample token back. Aha! That's the first time, right? That's the first time I'm touching ADFS. And if you're in modern authentication, that's actually the last time you're touching it too. Because if you're looking at this workflow, you remember that I need an access token again. I have my refresh token. I have my ticket already running. The next time, I'm not going to my own environment. I'm only going to go to the STS service because I have my refresh token. So if you're applying certain ADFS rules and you don't understand why they are not working, well, you're not even touching them. I'm not going to go there, except it's the first time. So that's why we say use client access on the Office 365, because otherwise you will not be able to use them. So let's go through some of the customer scenarios to give you an idea on the different scenarios that we run into. Some of them seems to be very easy. Some of them are very easy when we have the solution. Sometimes it takes a longer time, and sometimes shorter time. But I'm going to give you 5 examples and 1 bonus example, just because, as I said before, this is the most complex environment or the workflow I ever worked with. I think I had 1 scenario, and that's going to be the bonus scenario, I have had more than 1 case on. Every other case is an exception, which just makes it fun. Not always the customer appreciate the interesting of fun. Okay, so the first scenario. Customer calls in, or escalated, worked with us for some time. It turned out to be a federated environment, and we're using Outlook 2013 and 2016. And they say, well, modern authentication doesn't work. And, by the way, Word and OneNote doesn't work either. Well, since you have been here, you all know that if Word doesn't work, everything is broken, right? It's because it's single sign-on, it works, or everything is broken. Then you can start wondering, where should I start in this scenario? Well, we all learn we can use a workflow. So let's see where we can kind of narrow it down to. We can start from the bottom. Well, obviously, I can't access it. It doesn't work, right? So it doesn't work at all. So it can't be the last part. And you can ask the customer, is it for one user, every user? Yeah, it's for everyone. Okay. Has it ever worked? No. Okay, that kind of gives you an idea. So do you get a ADFS logon, you know, that we have to type in your username and password? No. Okay. Do you get the first dialogue when you actually do the redirect? No. Okay. Then we can actually skip the whole workflow because we know we're not even, either it's totally misconfiguration, the whole setup, or it actually could be something more located on the client. So what can we do on the client? As I said before, we came in a little bit later into the game than others. So modern authentication only works with Outlook Office 2013 or later. And you need to have applied certain updates, but I will suggest that you're actually using the latest updates. You maybe kind of get the message here. So in order for 2013 to work, we also have to set the register key called enable ADOL. And that is something some people are missing, and we have seen cases on that, true. So first you can run is check the register if enable ADOL. For 2016, it's on by default. So we're trying new modern authentication connecting to Office 365 on by default. So you don't have to set the register key. But if you do set the register key, you set it to 1, it's equal to the same thing that you don't have it at all. If you set it to 0, you will disable it. So then, I don't know if everyone have heard about it, but I can strongly recommend you to install and download and look into an Office Configuration Analyzer of CAT. It's a fantastic tool. It's developed by one of my colleagues, and actually every engineer, I was about to say in the planet, but every engineer at Microsoft in the Office division have helped giving scenarios into it. What I mean scenarios is, I'm going to show you in one scenario a little bit later on, but it basically means if I'm working with one customer and realize if you're having this register key and you want to do that, that in the end could actually be a problem. So we have added logic into this tool. And it also gives you a fantastic overview if you're going to a client of a consultant, for instance, and you want to see what's installed, what kind of machines do you have, what's register keys do you have. you can actually get a very, very good overview from an office client's perspective. And also, if you're running in Outlook, you get information about additional mailboxes, you get information about the amount of items. This tool is amazing. And if you haven't used it before or seen it, I would strongly recommend into using it. So in this case, if you have worked with Microsoft support, I can almost bet that heavy ask for an off-cat output. And this helps us, because in the past, when I started, we actually sent faxes to customer. And it was fantastic when we starting to see the customer's environment, but we still have to ask them a lot of questions. This helps us to give you an overview, as I said, raise the keys, other scenarios you're actually already having. So this helps us, and it for sure can help companies. We have large enterprise customers that roll this out internally for all employees, and it's been companies like for 200,000 users. So it's really used, and it's really, really good. So if you haven't played around with it and used it, I would really strongly recommend to it. So in this case, going back to our scenario, modern authentication doesn't work at all. So they check the registry key. Okay, that's good. It's on or off depending on the version. I'm using off-cat again and standing. Do we have something else that shouldn't be there or maybe interfere? Next one is logging. Logging in this case comes from MSO, the kind of the underlying layer here for authentication layer. If you want to do logging for Outlook 2013, that's the register key. And then you're starting Outlook, you do reproduce your problem, or Word, or whatever it's going to be. And then you get an outlook.exe.log or word.exe.log. And if you're using, you can use Notepad or any other product to open it up. And if you're actually doing something with ADOL, I can recommend you searching for ADOL. If you don't find anything else, it's broken, that's for sure. So in this case, they have the output. And depending on the build they're running, the user, so the first one actually says flight is not enabled for domain. Kind of gives you an indication of what the problem is here. Or in the latest one, it says, is ADOL disabled via Exchange Flightning? Okay. So if you may have worked in modern authentication earlier on, before we had actually have a paid public beta, so you actually have to sign up and say, yes, we know it's going to be a problem for certain products, but we still want to kind of try it out with the tenant, with Office 365 and modern authentication. But now, we actually have a command line, so you can use PowerShell to actually log on and see if it's enabled or not. Or you can actually enable it as an admin yourself. So in this case, actually the tenant wasn't enabled. So of course it's going to be very difficult for the client to use the modern authentication because the tenant in this case was not enabled at all. But it sounds kind of simple, but it's not the only case. Okay, apparently I have more cases. It's not only case that we run into. So sometimes it could actually really be the basic. And sometimes it's something totally. But this actually simple case have learned us a few things. It's learned us to start using the workflow that we've shown. It also starting to see, okay, we can use TCO logging, which is the office logging. So we know how we can enable it and you can look into it. It also showed us off-cat to help us understand what's going on. So, next one. This is a customer. They were on federated environment. All the mailboxes was in Office 365. They used Outlook 2013. They were a little bit more than 100,000 users. And one day in November last year, they started to get a couple of hundred help desk call every day to say, hi, Outlook doesn't work anymore. You remember when I started what the goal is for this session, to be kind of be able to say more than hi, out to get me a password prompt or does it connect? So what happened was, so the users come in on Monday and they start Outlook and they realize, okay, Outlook goes disconnect, strange. Does it work for you? Yeah, it does, okay. I'm restarting Outlook, doesn't work. Okay, I'm gonna restart the machine, have a coffee. Starting out, still disconnect. Starting to your colleagues, some colleagues it works for, some it's not. Okay, a little bit strange. So what they did find out was that if they actually logged out and in again in Word, it all worked. Then Outlook, swish, worked again. So what did this tell us? It didn't tell us, going back to this scenario again, right? It did tell us that if I didn't have anything cached, which basically means clear credential manager, in credential manager, the whole workflow worked, right? So I open the mailbox, I go to the exchange, so the service is not down. It could assume the service is down, but it's not. I got the logon page, and I type in my username. I'm redirected to the DFS logon. The domain controller says, fine. And then I get the SAML token, and then I send back the information, and it's kind of, wow, it worked. So it can't be that process is not totally broken. It got to be something else. So what else can it be? So let's see. If it's not totally broken, the next step was like for me in Frankfurt going to Atlanta. So the first line is seems to be working, but the second one is not. So it could be, could it be related to the refresh token something? Maybe. Because in the end here, the problem is that I can't access my mailbox. In terms of authentication in Outlook, it's either you authenticated, yes or no. In this case, it's like, maybe. Outlook doesn't compute with maybe. Either we are authenticated or we are not. If we are running into maybe, it's broken. It's not Outlook's fault. I can tell you that most of the times. But then we realize, okay, if I get something is broken in the chain, it's not totally broken because I can log on if I'm using logon and off in Word. So the problem is I can't get an access token. If I can't get an access token, it means I have to present my refresh token, right? So I'm trying to log on to the mailbox, but it seems like the thing I'm presenting, which is the refresh token, have some problems. So in this case, we actually did enable logging. And we logged everything anywhere, and we looked everywhere. It's very simple when we look in the past now, what it could potentially be. So we named Fiddler. We looked into the Outlook logging, and then MSO logging. Since this was 2013, we enabled it on TCO Trace. I have added a reference for 2016. Don't go home and enable it on your machine. That little logging is very chatty. Extremely chatty. So the Outlook 2013 is fine. It's perfect for troubleshooting. 16 is amazing to troubleshoot, but it's very chatty. When I say that, you're starting Outlook and you have easily 250 megs in a second. So it's very, very chatty. So be careful when you're working with us or if you do go to client and troubleshoot, if you want to look into the log files, it's absolutely perfectly fine. But be kind enough to delete the register key or set it to zero. Otherwise, the client will not bet this kind to say, my hard drive is out of disk space. So don't do that. So let's look into, since we know it's not Outlook here, we kind of looked into the log. It's like, I get some funky error here. So we went into the TCO log. And this is, of course, just a snap of the log files because it was quite big. So when you open up the log file and you think you have problems with the ADOL, you can start by searching by ADOL. As I said before, if it's totally empty, something's very broken. You don't have to look further, at least not for that. The next part is error. Of course, in this case, we realized we just wanted to confirm that we think that the refresh token was broken. So in this case, it actually says so. The provider access granted expired or revoked. So this is kind of confirms I was suspicious when we looked at the workflow that my refresh token has actually expired. Then is the question, there were some other scenarios it's too long to go deep into now, but could I really trust that? Can I really make sure that the error on the client says that this is actually expired? So then, of course, I talked to the team with the STS, and you remember the client's request that I mentioned before in the early? Now I can use that to them and say, hi, can you look up this client request ID that comes from this particular client? Has this actually expired, or is it something on your side? And they said, no, it's fine. It actually expired. Then this makes more interesting. Refresh token expires every day. Not for me, because it lives between 14 to 90 days. We know that. But it's not. It's kind of the whole process, right? We can't break everything just because the refresh tokens need to be renewed. So we need knowing that something is still broken in their environment. And the first thing I ask them is, have you done any changes in the backend? No. I don't want to be rude, but 20 years of experience, when someone says that you haven't done any changes in the backend, I'm not always trusting that answer. And in this case, actually, it was true. They haven't. So, so we all know, back to this scenario, we know that it's not the Stockholm-Frankfurt scenario. It's a problem with Frankfurt-Atlanta. So it turned out to be several scenarios, but the solution was to update the mso.dll because that was not updated. In this case, we didn't handle the error message correctly from the service. Plus, it turned out to be, they didn't use the ADFS, they used a third-party vendor. And that didn't have Windows integrated, which kind of also triggered that this particular problem happened. So again, we used the workflow, we could easier try to find out where in this workflow we kind of had the problem. Next one, this is going to be the bonus one. Because I have seen it enough, so I need to point it out. So please don't run into it. Or at least not after this session. So the scenario is as following. You have a federated environment, so it's basically on-prem, and you have Office 365. You could have out to 2007, 10, 13, 16, it doesn't really matter. I have worked with clients with 10,000 up to 200,000 running into this problem. And when this happens, people are not so happy because they just changed the password and they cannot get into Outlook. It doesn't matter what they do, Outlook goes into disconnect mode. If you're in online mode, it's just going to connect disconnect directly. If you're in cache mode, we're going to use the local cache, as you know, but then, again, it's not going to be yes, it's going to be no, it's going to be maybe. And we don't compute with maybe. So the scenario is legacy. So basically, this is not the workflow for modern authentication. This is how it used to be when we don't use it. So Outlook connects to Exchange. Exchange realize, you are federated. I'm going to send you right back to the ADFS. And the ADFS is going to talk to the main controller and say, here's the password that comes from this user. And that comes from Credential Manager. So Outlook connect to Exchange, sending over the Credential Manager information. Exchange redirected to the ADFS. ADFS talked to the main controller. The main controller said, that password, it's not right. I better check with my PDC emulator if that's actually the correct one, because the user may have actually changed the password. So the domain controller do a secure connection to the PDC emulator. It's like, no, we actually do have the latest one. Okay, so the domain controller is going to say no to the ADFS, and ADFS talk to Exchange, and then Exchange is going to say no to client. That's how it should work. And if the server says no to the client, which means basic access denied, I'm going to password prompt. I type in the password prompt and update the credential manager, and it's all fine. But in this case, the main controller says no to the ADFS server, and then the ADFS server says maybe to the service. Because there was a problem at one point with ADFS 3.0. It's fixed with the latest updates, so if you have applied that one, you don't have a problem. But if you're wondering how to troubleshoot it, you can actually enable debug logging on the ADFS server and choose debug, and then you look into event log, and you see the XML data, how the ADFS is sending over to the Exchange. It's just an XML code, and you can see it's in clear text. That was incorrect. So when Exchange got it, it's like, that's strange, but I don't know. So I forward the client, and client says, I don't know. I'm not authenticated. I don't deny it, so I'm just going to wait here. And that's why you see disconnect. And so every time you most likely see disconnect in Outlook, you know you don't have to start troubleshooting Outlook because it's not Outlook's fault. But it doesn't mean it's easier to troubleshoot. So in this case, and this actually happened to the to some of the third-party vendors too, so it was not only ours. fault we had our vendors actually had the same problem that they worked on. So that was the, so make sure again that if you're working with this, if you're running into clients that actually do have this problem, make sure you not only the client is updated, make sure also the EDFS and the third parties are updated. Next one. So this one actually was sold on Monday. So it's quite new. It was a POC, proof of concept. This should have been sold like a month ago. So when you're getting escalations and they say, yeah, this should have already been sold, you kind of feel like, okay, that's thank you. And this have 40,000 out of 2010 users and 500 of 2016 users. And they said, when I change my password, I don't get a prompt. And it's like, does that ring a bell for the formal case? Like, you have some EDFS problems, or actually you don't have the update. They did, so you should not assume. But the problem was, it wasn't really only open up the calendar that changed the problem. It was actually, aha, I can't even create a profile to the up in the cloud. Okay, that makes it a little bit different. If I'm using out to 2016, it all worked. Okay. If I disable enable ADOL, so not using the modern authentication in 2016, that's what my assumption, it didn't work. Of course, it didn't work either. So then we know again, right, this picture, if I'm using the old legacy environment, until 2010 doesn't speak, doesn't spell modern authentication the same way as 13 and 16, and we're not going to implement it either. So in this case, we know that Outlook's trying to connect to Exchange. Exchange realizes federated, send it down to ADFS, and then we do funky stuff. And so, but it kind of, it can't be totally broken because if I'm using 16, it actually works. So that's a little bit the funky part here. And the interesting part with this particular case was that there are two steps when you're creating a new profile. The first one is trying to locate where is my mailbox, either on-prem or in this case up in the cloud. We're using something called Outer Discover. And that worked. So actually, I could get my information. So I knew I can enable logging. I can actually see in the, even creating the profile. The first step was kind of checked. So I can see that I know where my mailbox is. But when I'm trying to log on, it doesn't work. This one was actually a combination of two things. First of all, this admin on ADFS, he was a little bit too clever for his own good. This is one of the most clever claims we ever seen. But he missed one part. He needed to kind of let Outlook go through too. And the last part was that using the ADFS trust was not configured correctly. So this gives you an example of you having the problem in Outlook, but you need to use the workflow, and if you understand the workflow, it's easy to understand where you can start troubleshooting. Otherwise, you can work on troubleshooting Outlook forever. It's not going to solve this particular problem. Another scenario, which is also in federated, you see a theme here, a lot of federated issues. Outlook 2013 and 16. So again, change password, but a different one. This time it says 2016 is working and 13 is not. It gives me a dialogue, a white dialogue. Okay. So again, going back to our workflow. So if it's working in 16, it should mean that the whole environment works, right? Just kind of, okay, I'm logging on Exchange. Well, this works because I connect to it. And if I'm changing the password, I need a new refresh token, and the whole process works. I can't really blame the configuration in this case. I can't even blame ADFS or anything else. But 13, okay, so what's the difference between 13 and 16 then? Well, we applied the latest updates. It was not that. We applied MSO because that's kind of what we have learned before. That's what we're going to do. But when working with modern authentication, we also actually have another one, the ADOL.dll file. And that one is responsible for the next communication with the STS. So in this case, don't try this at home. But we took the 2016 ADOL.dll file and put it into the 13 directory and tried it out, and it worked. Aha. So now we know that the whole scenario is, again, working just fine. It's something on the client. So in this case, it was to update the client with the latest ADOL.dll file. And that's in a KB article because it's in a specific MSP package. So this is, again, giving an example of that using the workflow, having an understanding of the workflow, and then narrow it down. Because otherwise, you're going to try to run everywhere. But as soon as you can kind of pinpoint where the problem is, it's much easier. I wouldn't say it's easy, but it gives you a chance. Another customer called in, and they said, okay, we have 2013, we have terminal servers. We have about 5,000 users. After some troubleshooting, we realized that, okay, if I'm having a new entity profile, it all works. He was not so keen on creating 5,000 new entity profiles for his users. So we tried to find another solution here. So basically, this also tells us we don't have to go through the whole workflow again, right? Because we know the whole steps works. And a new entity profile means something in registry on the local on the client machine. So we know that. So then we have a few options. We can run Offcat to get an understanding of what's going on. Or we can aim a logging. In this case, we did both. So we're starting again with enable logging on the client. We got the log files. We're starting to search for it. We looked into ADOL. When you see trying to enable ADOL, not enabling ADOL, that kind of sounds a little bit bad, right? And then there's some kind of regex key here. At that point, we also run Offcat. And when we're using Offcat, we got it much easier. It may be a little bit difficult to say, but this is a very good example that Offcat itself can recognize that, aha, you have a register key here, and that register key is set to 0, which basically means that you're not allowed the client to go outside if your network. If you're having Office 365 client, you may want to connect outside your environment at that point because otherwise you have very limited functionality. So in this case, we have the register key. We use the logging. We're using the Offcat, and we actually have the using. We can use an KB article and or a technet to give you more information. So I'm just going to throw out there and give you some tools to use in the case you want to troubleshoot it yourself. This is one of the tools that we are using, and it's also basic on authentication problems when you password prompts. So you may or may not work together with us with these tools. So what's other get there is you actually collect data. You can use a step recorder to see kind of what's going on. If you want to kind of go to the client, collect the data, and then go home and look into it. It gives us a filter trace on the scenario, so we can actually go through it. And also gives us event tracing, dumping a register key before and after if you're trying to kind of figure out what's going on there, and kind of gives you an output on the credential manager. All of this you can, of course, do manually, but sometimes it's kind of handy to have a tool that kind of helps you. Another tool, if you haven't seen it, I recommend you to go back to look for the session that they had for Gabe Bratton for support and recovery assistant is Sarah. It's similar tool, but even next generation of Offcat. This is more communication-wise, and it's more driven to kind of solve the problem for you. So it can also be used, and you can see it's a little bit difficult to see, but it's also a check mark down in the left corner. If you're working with us, we can kind of send information to us. And in this case, as we work with password prompts, we actually have a scenario that kind of gives you an idea on what you can do with passwords. Another tool is, if you haven't heard about it, it's on the web, is Test Connectivity. That one gives you also links to some of the Sarah tools, but it also gives you some scenarios. If you want to test your environment, if you think you have DNS problems, seeing a sign on, it's very handy in you to kind of give you a short check what's going on. So here are the links to these tools. So troubleshooting modern authentication is, of course, it kind of helps if your tenant is enabled. And also, as I said, make sure your client is updated. I kind of hope that this get through this time. And also, it's not only the client, but make sure the environment is updated too. And of course, if you have troubles, look into the register keys that you're working on. But far most, you don't have to remember all this. I mean, really download the PowerPoint slide deck. You don't have to remember what I said, but kind of use the workflow to help you quick and narrow it down, because it will help you, because that's the way we are trying to do. Because it's, as I said, it's so complex, but if we kind of remove, it's like, peeling an onion, right? For us, it's kind of remove everything that's not relevant, and as quickly as possible, pinpoint where the problem is. And the workflow gives us an idea. It doesn't always give us an obvious, but why should I troubleshoot something on Outlook when I kind of think it's an ADFS based on the workflow? Why should I kind of go to the AFS server, look into client access rule? Well, it's not even there because it's up in the cloud. If I'm going outside of Starbucks, why do I get prompts? Well, you kind of understand now. So using the workflow, understanding how the process works will help you much quicker to kind of narrow it down and understand where the problem is. And for us, that's what we're doing. We're trying to narrow it down. We need to understand the whole environment. When we do, then we kind of pinpoint it quicker to kind of move forward. So I can really encourage you to use the workflow. You don't have to go home and kind of tell your colleagues use a ticket and using the boarding pass, but you can actually think about it when you're troubleshooting. Where was I when I'm trying to shoot when I'm flying? Also, so the deep dive into the authentication issues, what we covered today, a slightly broader understanding of the process. And I hope you can now feel more confident in terms of trying to narrow it down much faster and how to troubleshoot these issues. Again, we didn't look into the log files, but that's not important at this point. The important is to understand the process, because that is going to help you, because that is the hard part. And with that, I wish you a very nice Friday. I also wish you a safe flight back home. And please, as always, fill out your email. And I wish you a nice weekend. Thank you.